to 32 Fans in 32 days. I'm Alex Chester, and with me, as almost always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
Almost always.
Well, you've been a little bit absent the last couple of weeks for certain segments of certain episodes.
Which segments of which episodes?
I guess listeners will have to go back and notice a silence of Akiva for a long time, unless I just muted your line because you were giving annoying hot takes.
Yeah, I was in New York. It was a really whirlwind few weeks. Now I'm back. I'm a little jet-lagged still.
You were in Florida with the Zika sushi.
Yeah, I was in Florida. I was in New York. I was in Paris. I've been all over the world, I have to tell you. And the only place I really care about is my bed. Like, my office and my room back here is my solitude. And the only person I care about is the man who's delivering my dinner in a few minutes that hopefully I'll hear because I have my headphones in.
Yeah, by the way, I'm impressed by the fact that you've lived in Israel for like a decade and still don't know enough Hebrew to order on the phone.
Oh, you heard me say, can I order in English?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, the truth is I did most of it in Hebrew. It's just like if I can't understand something, I'd like to. I then turned and ordered.
You said your phone number in Hebrew, so you do know the number is 0.
Oh, no, I turned and did almost the whole order. I don't know what to say. I know how to say onion, but I don't know how to say onion rings. I know onion's batzal, but how do you say onion rings?
Tabat batzal, I don't know.
I know fries is chips.
Yeah.
I could have done, though. I have and could have done the whole thing in Hebrew, but my preference is always to speak English, yeah.
Yeah, you're back home. The Olympics is over. Your favorite time of the year is done, although your next favorite time of the year is coming because football's almost on its way.
Yeah, you know, I love the Olympics more than anyone, but I'm also always so fine when they end. It's not like the NFL where I'm like depressed, like I'm still in a depression from February and I would pay like $1,000 for the NFL season to start tomorrow. Although there would be a lot of fantasy drafts I'd have to do tonight, but still.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, there's so many events. Like, Nate Silver had this awful take where he's like, the Olympics are too condensed into 16 days. Now there's over 300 events, and they're going to jump from like 306 to like 320 next time because they're adding baseball and softball and karate and sports climbing and something else I'm missing. And
still not tug of war for some reason.
No, tug of war has not gotten back. I feel like they could cut golf. I feel like golf was a universal failure. Keep women's golf because they really, like, I'm a, you know, like the 100th percentile of like minor sport fans, like the secondary sports. And like, I could name like dozens and dozens of male golfers, but I could name like 8 female golfers tops. Like, the women's golf has completely collapsed. Like, they have a lot of weeks that are off just because like there's no sponsors, so there's no events nowadays, and like they didn't even get Michelle Wee in that tournament anyway, so I don't know why I'm talking about women's golf, but yeah. But I love the Olympics. I miss like weightlifting already. I watched every jump of the women's high jump. There was so much drama.
Vashti Cunningham.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. It was like a high school meet because
she's 16.
Everyone missed every jump. It was like the event just ended.
I only watched the highlights on NBC.
Yeah, and it's insane. Like, I watched the whole thing online. I had my daughter in here. I was explaining to her, like, Shantae Lowe is an American woman. She has the best jump in the world this year. She's 32. She has 3 kids, one of them special needs. She lived in her car. She lost 2 houses. Like she has like 10 of those sob stories in one. This is her 4th Olympics. She's come in, I think, 4th and 5th and 6th now. She was in 4th place. Everyone had missed. So she had the last jump. It was going to be over no matter what. She hits the jump. She gets the gold medal. She misses. She gets 4th place. And she just missed.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was. But, like, you know, if you watch the whole thing, you realize, like, and it was crazy because, like, the British announcer on, like, the NBC live feeds online said, like, oh, you know, Ruth Batia, the Spanish woman, wins. This is clearly the highlight of the entire Olympics. Like, and, like, NBC, like, didn't even show her or say her name, I'm sure. And he's like, this is definitely the story of the games. Yeah, but it's like, I don't miss it anymore, and we shouldn't be talking about it because it's already Wednesday.
Well, so I want to talk about Olympics basketball for a second. So the American team, obviously, they ended up running away with it. Although, you know, they had a couple close games, obviously, Australia, Serbia in the early rounds, Spain in the semifinal. So here's my issue. The argument why America struggles relative to the other countries, even though their talent obviously vastly outweighs every other country. Every other country trots out like 3 or 4 marginal NBA players, and the U.S. has 12 NBA All-Stars, or 11 in Harrison Barnes. Mm-hmm. But the argument is because these guys play together every summer, they know each other, and the American guys are thrown together randomly, right?
Yes.
But we can agree that if the non-American teams were put in the NBA, they would be the first 7 teams in the lottery. Like, again, they are by far worse than any NBA team.
Of course. I mean, there's no depth. Like, the worst players in their team stink. Yeah.
Exactly. So my question is...
Most of the good teams have 7 or 8 players who could definitely be in the NBA, at least.
Yeah, and every NBA team has 12 guys who could be in the NBA.
Right.
Yeah.
but none of them have 12.
Yes. Okay, so my argument is that if the goal is to win, which is the goal, that's why we don't just send 12 superstars, but we've taken some role player type guys like Tayshaun Prince in past Olympics, mm-hmm. or Andre Iguodala.
Christian Laettner, role to be the white guy.
Yeah, no white guy this year. Well, I guess half of Klay Thompson. So why not just take the NBA champions? Why not take the NBA champions or take the Warriors? We had half the Warriors. Take the Warriors minus Andrew Bogut. Why not just send them? They've been practicing together longer than any other team.
And then who do you throw in instead of Bogut? You giving them Boogie instead of Bogut?
Who cares?
Well, they don't have a lot of big men that way.
Whatever, but they've been practicing together.
Those guys are falling apart. You should take like the best team that missed the playoffs.
Take any team. Take the Sixers. Any NBA team, right. Again, would win, and they've been practicing together longer than
would
these.
The Sixers this year have won? I'm not so sure.
And they also have been practicing together long because they're mostly guys on 10-day contracts.
Right. But yeah, no, like take a good team that lost in the first round of the playoffs that has some legs.
Yeah, whatever. So I don't understand why they don't do that. You know, they want to name the team well in advance. Guys have to have plans, etc. But if the argument is you need guys who practice together, then just take an actual team. So the other thing I want to talk about is our Olympics pool came to a close. It was a great success, I think, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we got it plugged, you know, to 70,000 people on Deadspin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I ended up in the money, which is pretty good. You ended up right in the middle, just about average, almost exactly average, despite the fact that you obviously are literally the 100th percentile of Olympics knowledge, and I know zero. And to me, it's not that I did better than you. Despite that, I did better than you specifically because of that.
Right. Is that why you beat me in NFL pools too? Your lack of knowledge does not hinder you.
Exactly. You know about my longtime fantasy league, which is very intense. Superfan Robbie's in it, for example. Mm-hmm. It is like the most intense league. Like we've literally, without exaggerating, sent over 1,000 emails in the last week. You know how like when you send a Gmail conversation after 100, the thread restarts?
Yeah, it's very annoying. There should be an option to not restart.
Yeah, we've started multiple threads like pretty much every day, so we're out of control.
Are there people who are normal who don't respond to every email, like who are just like there, but they never say anything?
Well, those people we filter out of the league because we want people who are super responsive and, you know, insane.
Because in my like keeper league, I haven't been responding. Like I don't even vote when they vote on like keeper rules and stuff now.
Ugh, you're such annoying.
No, I'll tell the commissioner like I can't deal with this now. Just you could take my vote as a vote for whoever you want.
Yeah, Shamaria always automatically votes with me. He's my Mussolini. If I'm Hitler, he's Mussolini. not that I want to exterminate Jews and gypsies, but just because a commissioner has to be a dictator sometimes and enforce the rule. Anyway, so in this league, not to toot my own horn because this is actually it sounds like a brag, but it's going to turn out into reverse of a brag. I've done very well in this league. I've won like 4 titles in 13 years, and I've made the playoffs every year but one pretty much. And the reason I do that, and I make this argument every year, is because fantasy football is 0% skill.
10% pain. 50% okay.
No. Yeah, but I'm the only one in this league who acknowledges that. And so everybody else in the preseason, they're like, all right, these are my sleepers. This is the guy I want to target. Other people always ask me for advice because they know I'm pretty good at fantasy football. And they say, all right, who do you like among tier 2 receivers? And I always answer, nobody and everybody. I force myself to remove any opinions I have. So look at the Olympics pool. You are an Olympics expert. You looked at all the events and thought Australia was going to do well. And so you picked Australia. Mm-hmm. What I did is the same thing I do for football and everything else. I took the average projections of a bunch of different websites, and I just went on that.
So you do that for football? You look at like, here's what Matthew Berry and Eric Carrible and all these guys.
I take 9 different websites. I average out their average projected scoring based on our scoring system, and I draft based on that order, 100%. I never deviate even one guy because I like him or don't like him, because I think that those biases only can harm, because I'm relying on objective analysis that has no opinions, mm-hmm. and maybe one or two of them are off on given players, but there's so many that they average out. Mm. And so like in the Olympics pool, you took Australia, and to me that was crazy because Australia, based on my projections, was worth exactly 39, which is how much they were going for. So to me, it wasn't a good pick because there was no value there. You thought there was value because you know actual Olympians, which I don't. Mm-hmm. Knowledge can only hurt. If you rely on stats, you'll succeed. If you inject your own opinions, even if they're knowledgeable opinions, you suffer, mm-hmm. is my opinion.
So there's never like a player in fantasy football that would be too abhorrent for you to own?
No. You know, bring on the murderers and the child abusers and the woman abusers.
That's just the Redskins' backfield. Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of the Redskins, so today we're talking the NFC East. It's our fifth division.
Oh, I meant Vikings. I don't know why I said Redskins, but good segue to my mistake.
Yeah. Okay, so I think I told you last week I was at this weird conference, this sports conference about like sort of public interest sports. So there was somebody there from Rise, which is an organization that Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins and the big University of Michigan booster, started to combat racism in sports. And part of Rise is they have this – this like this declaration that they want every single player to make. And they put out PSAs with the player saying it, and here, we can play it right now quickly.
Take the pledge and rise up against racism. And we'll
rise up. I pledge
to treat everyone with respect.
Respect.
And dignity.
I will not tolerate discrimination
or harassment of any kind.
I will speak up.
Speak up whenever I know discrimination is happening.
And I will stand up.
Get up.
Rise up for victims.
Take the pledge at risetowin.org.
So you hear that. So that's Tom Brady and Ryan Tannehill and a bunch of NFL players reading this declaration promising that when they see discrimination or offensive language, they will take a stand against offensive language. But of course, Tom Brady's a hypocrite because, you know, he says that in the PSA, and yet he hasn't spoken out when his the candidate he's endorsed for president has said discriminatory things. And there's an article in USA Today, which I'll link to in the podcast comments, which basically points out the hypocrisy of Stephen Ross and Rise, that they were asked why they said, why don't you take a stand against the Washington professional football team and boycott their name or at least call it out? And they refused to do that. So really, it's just a PR stunt. But here at 32 Fans, we're not just about PR stunts. We take principles. So we're going to boycott the Washington professional football team and not have a Washington guest on the podcast this year.
No, that's not really true.
Yeah. Actually, our Washington fan just IM'd us as we're about to start the podcast that he has an emergency and cannot make it. So, but, you know, let's try and pretend that we have principles when we have none.
Yeah, no, we'd have anybody on the podcast. But you were also mad they didn't give you kosher food. They were discriminating against you at the event.
Yeah, I did send out a tweet against them.
No one got back to you on that?
No. It was not a crowd. It was not a heavily kosher crowd. It was like everybody was like British. Like, first of all, it was people who all say sport instead of sports.
Ooh, I would have left right away.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of talk about sport.
That's like a hate crime for your ears. You should speak up about that.
And the weird thing is that they say sport in the singular, but they say maths in the plural.
Yeah, everything they do in England's wrong.
That actually makes sense because the word is mathematics, right?
Yeah.
So why do we say math in the singular, actually? That doesn't make sense. We say physics, whatever. Should we get to the NFC East?
No, let's just keep going with your awesome like mathematics rant.
Okay, Akiva, so when we had the AFC North on last time, you said that that is the most hated division in football. But I think pretty clearly the most hated division in football is today's division, the NFC East. All four teams hate each other, and everybody hates each of those four teams other than fans of those four teams, right? I mean, you have the Cowboys, who obviously everybody hates the Cowboys. You have the Eagles. You know, Philadelphia fans are seen as terrible, but the Eagles are sort of seen as the worst of that group. Washington, where you can't even say the team's name. You know, they have an owner who's seen as a dick and, you know, has destroyed that franchise. And then the Giants, who are, you know, the team in New York. Everybody hates New York anyways. The team with derp-faced Eli Manning. You know, they're seen as like the NFL's favorite franchise. They've won two bullshit Super Bowls.
Right.
And they can't even, you know, win more than 10 games in a season. So, I mean, is there anybody who doesn't hate all four of these teams?
Yeah, I was trying to think which, if you had to pick one that's more the most likable of the four, which would you pick?
Well, the Eagles, because you have sympathy.
Yeah, I guess they're hard to hate. Yeah, like the Redskins, you can't really root for them until Snyder's gone. I do think Jerry Jones has had a little bit of a face turn where he's like...
Well, he's literally had a face turn.
Yeah, well, that's
true
also. But he's not totally detestable, Jerry Jones, at this point, I don't think.
I mean, I don't agree with that, but we'll get to that as we bring our guests in. Yeah, so let's welcome our guests now. So we have guests to discuss the NFC East. We'll start with the team that finished at the bottom of the division last year. That's the Dallas Cowboys. And we have, as we did last year, to discuss the Cowboys, Jordan Parhar. Jordan, of course, hosts the Happy Hour podcast covering Big Brother and a bunch of other reality shows. Jordan, you're on Twitter at Jordan Parhar, your name. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure. To be back. I didn't expect the Cowboys season to go the way it did last year, but we'll see.
Was Jordan bullish? Chester remembers these things. Was Jordan really high on the Cowboys last year when we had him on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, both of us were also. You were especially. I think you had him like 5 or 6 in your power rankings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everybody was bullish on. I mean, I asked Jordan, I said, do you think that it's messing with karma to have so many jerks on the team? And he said no, but in hindsight, maybe it was a little bit.
Yeah, I think maybe a bit. Just a bit.
We have a new Giants fan. Last year, of course, Josh Berliner predicted the Giants would go 16-0, and he was the most incorrect of all our guests, and so we've replaced him. Here to talk about the Giants today is A.B. Sutton. A.B., welcome to the podcast.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. here to discuss the Eagles, as he was last year when he was a hardcore believer in Chip Kelly, a big believer in the system for the Philadelphia 76ers. So it's been a rough few months for him. unless he's bought the Kool-Aid on the new regime in town for all his teams. Shamir Seidman. Shamir, welcome back to the
podcast. Thank you. Thank you. I still have a stomach ache from drinking all that Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Okay, so Jordan, let's start with you. Let's start with your Cowboys. Again, this was the team that was worse than division last year somehow. Akiva's going to argue that it's all because of Tony Romo's injury and that if Tony Romo had been there, I don't know what, they would have got 11-5.
I mean, they had four quarterbacks throw 100 passes last year. I don't know if that's ever... I mean, they one, I think Whedon maybe only got to 98 or something like that, but they were two passes away from, I assume, being the first team ever to have four QBs throw 100 passes.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable year last year for the Cowboys. I mean, you think about all of the bad luck there. Yeah, Romo is the... That's really... he's the key to the team. I mean, you saw what happened without him. And I think, you know, this year they're going to be in major trouble again if he goes down. And I would not be too surprised if he gets injured, because I think Tony Romo is probably, he's arguably the most injury prone starting quarterback in the NFL right now, just with all these back surgeries and, you know, shoulder problems and all this other stuff. So I'm a lot more skeptical about the team going into this season than compared to where I was a year ago.
Yeah, three straight years he hasn't played 16 games. And the thing is, like you said, the backup thing, and they didn't... I mean, who's the number two quarterback right now?
Right now it's Dak Prescott, who they drafted.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. And, I mean, honestly, there's more upside there than... Yeah, it can't get worse. There's more upside with Prescott than with Matt Cassel or Whedon. I mean, Kellen Moore was okay. He didn't play well, but, you know, on paper, he's okay. But to me, my problem is, and you know, I'm a Jet fan, and we had in 2008 and 2009, or not 9 and 10, we had, you know, this all world offensive line. We had five Pro Bowlers, and they rode Mark Sanchez, who 1 year had 12 touchdowns and 21 interceptions as a rookie, to, you know, 15 minutes away from the Super Bowl. Basically, you guys have a better offensive line than that team that, you know, literally carried their way almost to the Super Bowl. And you're going to squander it if Romo gets hurt. So to me, it's insane not to have a better backup. But either way, like, I mean, first of all, I assume you agree, right? Like, this is kind of a historically good offensive line.
Oh, yeah. It's an amazing offensive line. And yeah, it's kind of going to waste. I mean, if you think about it, there's no help really behind Romo. I mean, Dak Prescott was unbelievable in his first preseason game, but that's one preseason game. I mean, he's going against, you know, the Rams' third and fourth string guys. So Jerry Jones now, after that game, Jerry Jones was saying, oh, he's like, yeah, we don't need a quarterback. We're fine. And it's like, dude, like, I just don't understand why they wouldn't just go out and get somebody. You know, Prescott, he's got promise, but you can't lean on him in year one. He's very raw and he's got a lot to learn. So I think it's a huge mistake. And the defense too. I mean, that defensive line with all these suspensions on the Cowboys right now, I mean, they're really going to struggle on defense. So they better hope that Romo stays healthy and that they just lean on Zeke and hope that he can carry them to the promised land.
Jordan, your backup quarterback could be worse. If Jerry Jones had gotten his way, it would be Johnny Football that you'd have.
Right? Yeah, well, I read the other day, Jerry Jones said that they will never sign Johnny Manziel ever, whereas a few months ago, it sounded like he was intrigued by Manziel when TMZ was, like, chasing him down. So who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if Manziel shows up at some point, but
it's hard
to
trust Jerry Jones also with, you know. He's also the one who last summer, remember, was texting with Adrian Peterson and they thought they might want him.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
somebody managed to convince him that you don't want to spend $15 million on a 30-year-old running back. Although, actually, let me segue that way and ask you about Ezekiel Elliott. So when you did the NFL, our draft preview in April, you said that if it's what you thought they would do, you thought they would take Joey Bosa. And if what you wanted them to do was take Miles Jack, who obviously, you know, ended up dropping all the way to the second round because of injury concerns, but you had no idea that Ezekiel Elliott was coming. And I think with good reason, because the Cowboys of all teams should be well aware of the fact that you don't want to invest heavily in a running back. They had DeMarco Murray lead the league in rushing in 2014, and they let him go. And it proved correct, because last year with a bunch of nobodies, with Darren McFadden as their leading rusher, I think they were fourth in the NFL in rushing. So the Cowboys know that it's about the offensive line. It's not about who you put in the backfield. So why waste the number four overall pick on a running back? Well, I'm sure we'll put up great numbers, great fantasy numbers, but anybody can do that with this Cowboys offensive line.
Yeah, exactly. And it's this is what happens when, you know, Jerry Jones, a guy who's, you know, really, he's like Donald Trump. He's just going to do a bunch of stupid things. And he wants the big, you know, sexy pick. And that was Ezekiel Elliott. When in reality, at that point, okay, Bosa's gone. They probably should have taken someone like Jalen Ramsey. I think that would have made a lot more sense to, you know, bolster that defense. But instead, you know, or maybe even taking the quarterback of the future. I mean, maybe it would require them to move up in the draft. Of course, but still, I don't know. I mean, I'm on board now at this point. I think it will be fun to watch, but I agree with you, man. I think that they definitely could have looked elsewhere for a running back that would have been more than capable.
I like the Donald Trump comparison, Chester, also because one, it's funny because you think about like Trump, and there's no way he'd ever be approved, like even before he started getting political, like super political, you know, a year and a half ago. There's no way he would have ever been approved to be an like an NFL or Major League Baseball owner.
Well, so like, because he destroyed the USFL.
Of course, like we would never. So we would never. Right. He's like the Isaiah Thomas of the USFL.
Do you see, he tweeted out about a year ago now something about how New England Patriots fans are really unlucky because he wanted to buy the team in like 1994 right. or something, and he didn't get. And I'm like, are you completely unaware of what they've done in the last 20 years under Bob Kraft?
Right. What were they going to do? Win 8 Super Bowls? But it is just amazing the idea that like that we wouldn't let this person be a. Like, you know, own a football team, but we would let him be president. And also, you know, to knock Hillary and Trump a little bit, you would never hire a coach who's 70 or 71, right? Like Coughlin couldn't get another job and he has 2 Super Bowls. You'd never hire. So like you're going to elect a president who's 70. An NFL team would never hire a 70-year-old coach because like how long are they going to last as, you know, before they start losing their mind?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's very very funny when you put it that way.
Well, Jordan's Canadian, so he'll just the only way he'll deal with the election is, you know, his people he knows migrating north possibly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. People have been talking the talk with that. We'll see if people actually walk the walk if anything happens.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about the defense now for a second. Jordan, as I'm sure you remember, going into the 2014 season, people were talking about how the Cowboys might have literally the worst defense in NFL history that year. And of course, they turned it around dramatically, and that was a big part of the reason why they went 12-4. And it was guys like Rolando McClain who sort of came, you know, had massive turnarounds from nowhere. Now Rolando McClain is suspended for 10 games. A lot of those guys who, you know, obviously Sean Lee is always injured and is getting really old. This defense looks like it's going to be really bad. The secondary, you mentioned, you wish that they had taken Jalen Ramsey. The secondary looks bad. The front seven looks a little bit better, but not very good. Where do you see any room for hope in this defense?
There isn't much. I mean, I honestly don't even know. Like, there's no even like. I guess a front seven's not so bad. If Sean Lee can somehow stay healthy, you know, that linebacking core is not that bad. But I don't know. The secondary's weak. It's just so many holes everywhere. There really is no hope. Basically, yeah, they're gonna have to take the 2014 model. Hope that Ezekiel Elliott is their DeMarco Murray, and that they just keep this defense off the field. Because I think this defense could be. I think this defense will be. You know, they were predicting in 2014 that one would be terrible. It wasn't that bad. I do think this one is going to be said defense that is the worst in NFL history. I really do. It could be. I really believe it could be in there. So I am a little bit just slightly concerned with how things are going to go on the defensive side of the ball this year.
So is your goal basically to be like the NFC's version of the Steelers? Hope that Romo stays healthy, you have a dynamite offense, and you just win every game 35-31?
Yeah, that's what I would love that. I mean, as a fan, that would be amazing. And, you know, I think, like, realistically, that's how they're going to win ball games. I really can't see them winning any other way. Like, I don't know how anyone on this defense is really going to force turnovers. I mean, Byron Jones, I could see him making a bit of a leap this year forward in terms of progress. But outside of that, I mean, there isn't anybody that I'm overly excited about on this side side of the ball.
All right. Well, I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, that's the truth.
All right, so let's transition. You talked about not being excited. To me, this is like the least exciting team in football because they're really the same team every single year. Again, except for times when they randomly make the wild card and then randomly win a Super Bowl. AB, that's your New York Giants.
Whoa, he's not a Ben McAdoo? Chester, you're not into Ben McAdoo? What are you talking about?
The Giants completely were a clusterfuck this offseason.
Oh, I'm going to talk myself into Ben McAdoo like being coach of the year by the time the season starts. No question.
But Akiva, they have, well, I will let AB answer, but they have an entire coaching team staff that's been identical for years and years, and they decide the problem is Tom Coughlin and only Tom Coughlin. Everybody else stays in place. The 71-year-old guy has to go. Like, that makes no sense. Either clean house or why getting rid of Coughlin?
I definitely don't agree with your assessment. McAdoo has really improved the offense the last 2 years. Eli seems like he's really comfortable in his system. He put up great numbers last year. Maybe not so much from an advanced stat perspective, who I think Pro Football Focus didn't love his season. But, you know, they're obviously passing a ton because of their terrible run game. And he's putting up numbers. And Coughlin, we know he kind of lucked into two Super Bowls, but Giants fans have been complaining about Coughlin for a decade. He runs a very predictable offense. You always know what's going to come. He runs when you should run. He passes when you should pass. He never takes a risk. He'll go for it on fourth down occasionally, but not as much as I would like. And I think McAdoo is a fresh change. If only for – they lost two games last year purely on clock management of the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. And I think McAdoo, maybe on his first day of hiring, said – I'm going to have like three guys on the sideline checking clocks purely, and I'm just going to rely on them. And just that could have made a two-game difference last year. So I think Coughlin was, he's a great players coach, but he was really a little behind the times.
Players coach? He makes everyone come early.
No, he had that reputation. And the players, I guess he turned around in that first Super Bowl season, and ever since then the players have loved him.
All right, hold on, AB. I'm going to call bullshit. So you said that McAdoo has really turned Eli around the last 2 years. Eli Manning is the only quarterback in the NFL. In fact, the only quarterback in history. Now, Pro Football Focus, their numbers don't go back that long. But he has gotten worse every single year for five consecutive years. 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15. He's gotten worse 5 years in a row. If you look at his numbers last year, you just look at total yards and touchdowns. You're like, oh, no, he's as good as ever. But he attempted a career high in passing attempts, which is why those numbers are inflated. His yards per attempt, lowest of his career. His average depth of target, lowest of his career. Usually when you're dink and dunking like that, you'd expect his completion percentage to go up. His completion percentage went down as well. So by every metric, other than just, you know, looking at like the big, you know, yards and touchdowns, Eli's gotten worse every year. And now he's 35.
He's shown no sign of, you know, his age affecting him. I mean,
except for the fact that he's gotten worse five consecutive years in his 30s.
The offense is built for dinking and dunking, admittedly. So I would expect the yardage to go down per pass or per completion. I'm sure both have been down. So that doesn't surprise me. And I would actually attribute some of the poor numbers, and I know this might be a stretch, but I really hate Reuben Randall. Every time it seems Eli is targeting him, it ends up being intercepted, or he somehow fucks up the route, or... I think just the departure of Randall, as amazing as that may be, is the biggest improvement to their offense. And I really think, and there's a lot of optimism among Giants fans that they're going to have a great offensive season. I don't know anyone who's predicting them to be outside of the top 10 or 15 offenses in the league.
I do think, first of all, don't you think the Giants fans are like as optimistic a bunch as any fandom in the NFL?
They usually are, and that usually ends up. I have a rule of thumb, kind of, that every conversation about football in New York ends up in a conversation about whether Eli Manning's elite. That's how they all end, one way or another. You get there. Giants fans obviously love hyping him up. I'm more realistic about that, but we're a pretty rosy bunch.
I mean, Chester's ragging on Eli, but his completion percentage was great. His yards per completion.
It was worse than the year before. Than the year before.
The year before was the best of his career, though.
Yeah, because he's dink and dunking, and yet it's still getting worse. Again, his passes were shorter last year than they've ever been. By dramatic. His average depth of target in 2014 was 9.2.
Well,
last year was 8.1.
Maybe his receivers are doing, you know, some magic, but he...
Well, obviously one of them is.
I think the single biggest reason for optimism is got to be the division. You just heard about the Dallas defense a second ago, and it wasn't too bright. No one's liking the Eagles this year for obvious reasons. And the Redskins, like, does Kirk Cousins scare you? I know he had a great season last year, and I'm not taking anything away from that. But, I mean, you're not scared of the guy. You could let – and they're the Redskins, or sorry, the Washington football team. You know, there's no one that really worries me out there.
I'm scared of Kirk Cousins.
You are?
I don't know. It seems pretty scary.
What about who's going to be the running back for this team?
I think Rashad Jennings is a little underrated. He's perfectly capable of being the lead running back for a team. And if it was Coughlin, it would certainly be him, given his conservatism. But with McAdoo, I have no idea. There's probably like three or four names that wouldn't shock me. Andre Williams, who's awful, but they seem to like him. They drafted Paul Perkins, who shows promise. He's looked good in training camp. They still have a couple of other guys. Shane Vereen is not going to really run the ball, but he's there as an asset. And I think Bobby Rainey is still on the roster, who he's okay.
All right, let's talk about the offensive line for a second. The interior of the line looks like it's pretty good. The tackles, last year, Eric Flowers, granted, he was a rookie, so he could improve, but he was the worst NFL tackle, left or right tackle in the entire NFL. Again, he's a rookie. Maybe he improves a little bit. On the right side, of course, you have Marshall Newhouse, who was the sixth worst tackle in the NFL and has been below average in all five of his seasons. So what's going to happen? I mean, do you see any room for improvement on this offensive line? Because that's really going to impact, A, if Eli can have time to throw the ball downfield to Beckham Jr., and B, if they can get any kind of running game.
I don't really expect any improvement. But if we get what we had last year, we should still be okay. The only hope for improvement is really Flowers, and I don't think that would shock anyone. If he learned something over his first year in the league and was able to apply that this year. But even with the line that they have, Eli is capable of doing an okay job. Obviously, I like their receivers. So usually if he just has to put it in the area and Beckham will get it, and hopefully Sterling Shepard turns into another weapon down the field. So even with slight improvement to the offensive line, I'll be okay. And I don't expect anything really drastic to change. Newhouse is going to be what he's been and what he's always been, and that's pretty, pretty bad. By the way, I did want to mention when you were running through the list of reasons to hate the Giants, I don't know if you caught their kicker was suspended again for domestic violence.
I was going to mention it. Yeah, she's accusing him of hitting him over 20 times. So your special teams leading the league in something, finally.
There you go. So that's another reason. But I can't believe you think the Eagles are the least hated. They're the Eagles. I mean, their fans are known to be the biggest assholes in the league. So,
but is that Eagles in particular, or just Philly in general?
Philly. But if you've ever been to Philly, they chant Eagles at Philly's games. They're all over the place.
No, I know.
By the way, still the most likable Josh Brown. I know. That came late.
I think I know who you refer to.
I sympathize with the Eagles because they're sort of like the Vikings or in basketball, like the Jazz or the Suns or like the pre-2004 Red Sox. They're a team that has been good for so long and has made the playoffs so many times and hasn't come through. So I have a little sympathy there. You know, I haven't got to hate them winning a title like I have for every other team in this division. Let's jump to the defense. The Giants seem sort of similar to the Cowboys in that they're heavy on the offense, weak on the defense. Their defense isn't as bad as Dallas is. First of all, do you like the draft pick of Eli Apple, and more importantly, the draft pick of Eli Apple's amazing Twitter mom?
I did not catch the Twitter mom story, so maybe you'll fill me in. But as far as the pick, I didn't really like it. I was hoping for an offensive line pick, and I think they were planning on that, and there was some gamesmanship, and a team found out, I can't remember the specifics, but a team found out that they wanted someone and jumped it and made a trade ahead to get him. So it was disappointing, but I don't think it hurts to have another cornerback. And his name seems to fit if we want something to fall back on.
Yeah, I hope that didn't impact their decision.
No, hopefully not.
And what about the front seven? They spent a lot on free agents, obviously, Olivier Vernon, Damon Harrison. Usually when you invest heavily in free agents, it doesn't work out well for you.
Well, that may be the case, but on paper, there's really nothing to complain about. I mean, who doesn't want Vernon on the line with Damon Harrison, who... I think he's called Snacks. I'm not.
Yeah, he's called that. Can I make a case why Damon Harrison's going to be a bust?
Sure.
He can't play against the pass, so he's off the field. You know, traditionally first and second down, but in the modern NFL, it's closer to first down. He's on the field, and then he's going off. The guy who put up similar numbers to him last year, Kenrick Ellis, signed with the Giants for much less money and didn't even make the team, I don't think. I think he ended up on the Vikings, maybe vice versa. But... he was also like the second best run defender in the NFL for the Jets. Whoever plays between, Wilkerson and Richardson and now Leonard Williams is automatically going to have the best, run defense stats in the NFL because there's no offensive lineman near them. So they're just tackling the running back when it comes to them. So that to me, that's an insane amount of money that's not going to pay off.
It's definitely too much money, but that's not going to hurt us this year. I don't think they were going to really put that money anywhere else useful. I mean, maybe they would, who knows? But it's just from a stats perspective. I mean, he's kind of almost a luxury on that line. It's really shaping up to be, on paper, one of the best in football. So we have JPP and Vernon, and then Jonathan Hankins and Harrison. If one guy doesn't pan out, and he should be fine, even if he's overpriced, I think we can live with that.
All right, let's jump to the EAGLES Eagles. Shamir, I feel bad making fun of you because I honestly feel like I'm talking to somebody in 1984 who within the same speech can be tricked into, you know, completely supporting wars against contradictory enemies within the context of a single paragraph. As we said, Shamir, you were all in on Chip Kelly last year, 100%. And now the Eagles went as opposite as they possibly could from Chip Kelly. They bring in Doug Peterson, who's like the Andy Reid backup. They paid a premium to get rid of every single guy that Chip Kelly brought in. They made multiple trades and gave up huge assets to get a quarterback who they say isn't even if he was healthy, isn't supposed to be active this year. So tell us, have you bought into this?
Well, I don't know what they gave up to get rid of the salary. They basically dumped the salary, but they didn't really give up a lot to get rid of it.
Well, they gave a draft pick.
Kiko Alonso. They gave up Kiko Alonso. That's it.
All right. So, Shamir, are you in on the Eagles' offseason moves?
I mean, I like a lot of the moves. I don't know if this is a team that's ready to compete for a Super Bowl yet, but I'm a fan of a lot of the moves. I think that, you know, taking a step back and realizing, you know, that a lot of what Chip Kelly had done was pretty much terrible, I guess to say the least, and kind of going back to basics is a good thing. It's not... You know, they didn't make anything flashy. They didn't go crazy. They didn't overpay anybody. They didn't, you know, sign like a Albert Haynesworth or one of these, you know, massive stupid contracts. They did things pretty conservatively, and then it kind of followed the trend the whole offseason, and they went a little buck wild with the Carson Wentz trade. But I think overall I'm happy with the moves. They added guys like Barrett Brooks, who's an offensive lineman from Houston, who was an under-the-radar, you know, player, an ascending player. A guy, Rodney McLeod from the St. Louis Rams, also an ascending player. You know, small under-the-radar moves to help the roster. But one of the biggest offseason's acquisitions was Jim Schwartz. You know, he's probably the biggest name they've even added to the roster this season. He's an established defensive coach with a reputation of, you know, turning undervalued or underutilized players, you know, at various stops and turning them into good pass rushers. So, you know, they have some good pieces on the roster. They're definitely not a train wreck of a team on both sides of the ball. I think they're mediocre on both sides of the ball and slightly above average on defense. They do not have any real playmakers at offense to speak of, but I think they have a bunch of very, very, very solid players on defense. And, you know, historically, I guess under Chip Kelly, they were more of an offensive-minded team. I think this year they're going to be, you know, a little bit better on defense than they are on offense, and, you know, maybe the offense could surprise us. I mean, I'm not, you know, just commenting on what AB said. We now have Reuben Randall, so I guess that could also, you know, hurt our offense.
I mean, Shamir, I'm looking at this team. You said there aren't a lot of, you know, weapons offensively. Like, if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm facing the Eagles that week, first of all, I don't know who your quarterback is, but even past that, I mean, who am I, you know, game planning against? Like Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles?
Well, I mean, it's not like Darren Sproles hasn't.
No, Sproles is great, but he's a 33-year-old running back. He's the oldest running back in the NFL.
Yeah, he's hard to game plan for. I mean, Ryan Matthews went healthy. There's no negatives to his game. It's just a question is going to be on the field. He's explosive. He's big and he's strong, but you can't really rely on him over 16 games. But if you look at Doug Peterson and you look at where he's been and you look at what he's produced over the last couple of years, his claim to fame, I guess, as the offensive coordinator or as a co-offensive coordinator in Kansas City was getting the ground game with Jamaal Charles going and producing a lot of explosive plays with Travis Kelce at the tight end position.
Is the offensive line good enough to sort of facilitate that sort of thing?
I don't know. That's a great question because Lane Johnson was just suspended. Mm-hmm. Travis Kelce had a horrific, horrific season last year, and we're looking for a bounce back for him under a different scheme. They added the guy Brooks from Houston, who is a big body, should be moving an interior lineman. Jason Peters is probably good for one more quasi-elite season. But without Lane Johnson, you know, you never know. But manufacturing running lanes, you know, is easier said than done. You know, the running backs have to hit the right holes. There's a lot of factors that go into it. You know, Chip Kelly's offense was so simple last year that, you know, when the running back was offset right, you know they were running right. If it was offset left, they knew running left. It was very hard to, it was very easy to game plan against them. I guess if you go back to a more traditional offense, they can probably find ways to get the ball in space to their playmakers. And they have two good tight ends on this team. And, you know, based on what he did with Travis Kelce last year, I'm pretty optimistic that Zach Ertz and Brent Celek will be the focal points of this team. And then Jordan Matthews is still on the roster. Mm-hmm. He's had a couple of good seasons under Chip Kelly. He's still an ascending player. But beyond Jordan Matthews at the wide receiver position, you know, you can pick a name out of a hat.
I spent a lot of money on Nelson Aguilar in some fantasy league last year. Needless to say, it did not pay off. Switching to defense.
Well, hold on. Before we switch to defense, Shamir, you, of course, remember your bold proclamation that you made on last year's preview podcast about the offense.
The Sam Bradford prediction or the Eagles' offensive output production?
The 500 points.
Well, I was really jazzed after that third preseason game.
Yeah, that's the bet. We should have every team on right after their team wins like a preseason game against another team's fourth stringers.
I also remember predicting Cam Newton was going to have a train wreck of a season. So glad. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, so you should really compile the best of the predictions this year. I mean, it would have started with me picking the Dolphins to win the Super Bowl last season, so I can't really make fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, on defense, Shamir, I kind of like the front seven. Talk to me about the front seven.
Well, I'll start with Fletcher Cox. Fletcher Cox is one of the most underrated, underknown, under-respected players in the league.
He's 25. I would have guessed he's like 33.
He's got that old man look, but he's an extremely, extremely disruptive player. He's strong against the run, strong against the pass. And what every article that you read about him has been saying is that he was miscast in as a 3-4 nose tackle, and he's really going to thrive under a 4-3 in Jim Schwartz. Given the numbers he put up out of position in a 3-4, people are expecting tremendous things from him. And you look at guys like Brandon Graham and Vinnie Curry, both drafted by the Andy Reid era, both drafted as 4-3 ends, also been playing out of position. And both guys were given large contracts the last couple of years to, you know, based on where the team believes that they could be, you know, as elite pass rushers. Connor Barwin now has the inverse of those players where he's now miscast as a 4-3 end, but he's still a very dynamic pass rusher and he's very good at playing in coverage. They still have depth, you know, on the line. They have this guy, they have Benny Logan, who's a big run stuffer, big in the middle, and they have some other players that have been there for a while. But their weakness is still, there's some unknowns in the linebacker core. Nigel Bradham's a guy they brought in who has a history with Jim Schwartz. And Jordan Hicks is a second-year player who was actually drafted as a 4-3 linebacker, as a 3-4 linebacker, and now he's shifting. So there's a lot of moving parts because they're shifting from a 3-4 to a 4-3. So, you know,
it's a really young team, right? The team looks young all the way around, basically, except for the offensive line, basically.
Yeah, well, Leotis McKelvin's a starter. He's a little bit old. Malcolm Jenkins is a little bit older. But outside of those guys, they are a pretty young team. They've all been, you know, because obviously Chip Kelly got rid of all of the legacy players on the roster. And
you're talking about McKelvin and Jenkins. Like, to me, the secondary is a major problem. I don't know, like, who you guys are stopping with the names I'm seeing.
I view Malcolm Jenkins and Riley McLeod as the two above-average players in the secondary, and the rest is replacement level players across the board.
Kiva, Pro Football Focus loves their secondary. Thinks it's the 12th best in the league.
Nah, I'm not buying it.
Their problem is their linebackers. They have the worst linebackers in the NFL. Michael Kendricks was literally the worst linebacker in the NFL last year in coverage.
Yeah, you can probably pin, I think, 4 of Jordan Reed's touchdowns last year on Michael Kendricks.
You know, we don't usually talk about special teams, but breaking news during this podcast, your kicker has a concussion that he sustained during warmups when a punt hit him in the head.
let's categorize him as one of the two kickers fighting for the kicker job. So I wouldn't. Yeah.
That was a great punt by your place kicker Cody Parkey to knock Caleb Sturgis out.
Wait, so the Giants kicker is a domestic abuser. The Eagles kicker. What about the Cowboys kicker, Jordan? What's he up to?
He's Dan Bailey
hasn't gotten in the news this week yet.
No, I think he's good. I haven't heard anything, so I think we're good on that front.
All right, Akiva, do we talk about the Washington football team, or, you know, we're boycotting their guests, we're boycotting the whole discussion about them altogether?
Well, here's the thing. I know everyone knows that you have OCD, and there's no way we're not going to have, we're going to have 31 fans on, and you're going to let it slide. So I know we're going to have some Redskins fan on at some point. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm also a man of principle, though. And in this era of Donald Trump, don't we have to speak out against?
Yeah, but you might not have the, you, okay, I mean, what do you want to say about the Redskins?
I mean, doesn't it all depend on Kirk Cousins, really?
All right, fine. So the segment we're doing now is called Best in the Division. I'm going to ask you, we'll go through quarterback and coach and a few other positions, and we'll see if we have a consensus for who's the best in the division. Let's start with Shamir. Shamir, who's the best quarterback in the NFC East?
When healthy, Romo.
Not Eli.
No.
Okay. What about you, Jordan?
It's funny. I was going to say Eli, but yeah, I mean, when healthy, I mean, I think you do. I think you got to say Romo, but I think overall, you know, I think we got to go. If just in terms of looking at the range of outcomes, I think Romo, because of the, you know, the fact that he's so injury prone, I think we got to say Eli. I think Eli is the safest bet to have, you know, pretty solid year. Romo, I think, certainly could have a better year. Cousins maybe could too, but I don't know. Cousins, I'm just not buying it. I'm really not buying it. And Bradford, Wentz, whoever the quarterback is for the Eagles.
All right, so AB, break the tie. Who's the best QB in the division?
Well, obviously Eli. I mean, but in seriousness, I think being on the field is a pretty important. It's easy to say when healthy, but
no, I agree. Obviously, right. For taking him for a season where you could rely on Eli, who's missed zero games in his career. Versus Romo, who, you know, who's basically missed most of two seasons recently. It's hard to compare.
Right.
All right. I'm shocked. I didn't even think that was a debate. Akiva, are you also on team? Not team Romo?
The best offense overall in the division. Let's go back. AB. It's pretty clearly competition between New York and Dallas, just like the QB thing. Who has the best offense in the division?
It really all comes down to Romo, so it's hard to say. But, you know, given the injury risk, I would take the Giants.
I'm actually not ruling out the Redskins. They have a lot of weapons on offense. A lot.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that comment.
What are the Redskins going to do with running back, though? I mean, Matt Jones. Well, I really have no faith at all in Matt Jones.
Back? Like, who's the best running back?
Well, the Cowboys have Ezekiel Elliott, so I think that's locked down.
Jordan Reed is a top five NFL tight end. DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, the draft pick they got at wide receiver. Their offensive line.
What, Garçon is like 800 years old.
Garçon is done. Jackson is overrated. I think Josh Doctson's got a lot of potential, but Jordan Reed is phenomenal. But I don't know. I mean, that running game scares me a little bit. Is that offensive line that great either? I wouldn't say the Redskins. I would say it's between the Giants or the Cowboys, in my opinion.
I didn't say it was the Redskins. I just don't think it's a two-team question.
Okay, fair enough. But everyone agrees that the Eagles are not in that question.
Unfortunately not.
All right. Well, what about defense? This is such an offensive division traditionally recently, not historically. And I don't even know where to go with best defense. I mean, I guess Washington, but let me ask you guys, because that's what we're supposed to do. All right, Jordan, who has the best defense in the NFC East?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's hard. I guess the Redskins. I mean, the Eagles, you know, it's hard. I really, honestly, they're all pretty. I know the Cowboys certainly know, and the Giants. I mean, they've made some additions, but I still probably would say no. So yeah, I'll go with the Redskins.
What about you, Shamir?
Yeah, Breshad Breeland and Josh Norman. That's all you got to say in that division.
Yeah, I do think Breeland's going to have a big star turn this year. Also, I agree. And AB.
From watching the games, I think I'd also lean towards Washington. Although I know the advanced stats, they really like the Eagles. They weren't flashy last year, but I've heard that they put up good numbers.
All right, best coach in the division. That's an interesting one, I guess.
Akiva, can I ask you this?
Yes.
When we do our coach rankings,
yes.
You actually love McAdoo, but otherwise, to me, all four coaches would be in the bottom 12.
Okay. Well, let's ask them, and then we'll go back because they're like the talent here. You know, we're just like the schlubs. Jordan, who is the best coach in the NFC East?
Oh geez, that's hard. Oh man, I don't even. Like they're all pretty mediocre. I guess we haven't really seen much of Peterson. I mean, I'm kind of buying Ben McAdoo. I am. I think that she's shown some promise. I think that offense is going to be solid this year. So I'll say Ben McAdoo just because I don't really have a ton of faith in anyone else.
What about you, Shamir?
This is like a harder question than Trump or Hillary. I mean,
is that a hard question?
Yeah.
Whatever. Different podcast.
I listen. Ben McAdoo hasn't been the head coach. Neither has Doug Peterson. Jay Gruden has turned a terrible team into a respectable team, and just by process of elimination, I give him the nod.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Gruden has that upside, right? We don't really know like what he's totally capable
but
of.
But this team was a train wreck, and they seem like they're on the right track. So I think he's a big part of that.
Yeah, but what if they go 6-10 this year? Then his record is like 4-12, 9-7, 6-10, and he's automatically fired.
Of course. Okay, but Jason Garrett, I mean, he's proven nothing to me at least, and
okay.
I think again, terrible choices.
Let me ask Jordan. Jordan, if Jason Garrett, what does Jason Garrett have to do to keep his job this year?
He doesn't have to do anything because it's been proven that he does nothing year and time again.
I mean,
and
if they go
6-10,
he's
back.
Not keeping his job. I think you agree with that.
If they go 6-10 without Romo,
without Romo, I think he might be able to squeak by. Because here's the thing with Garrett is that Jerry Jones has invested all this time in Garrett, and he could have fired him multiple times.
Right, but that doesn't, he's still going to fire him if they're bad.
No, but I mean, I don't know. Like, for whatever reason, Jerry loves him. So, I guess if it's 6-10, he'll get fired. But even if, like, Romo gets injured and they could somehow pull out, like, 7-9 or something like that, mm-hmm. I think he'll get a pass. I really do. I think Jerry Jones is fine with mediocrity, and I don't get it. But that's kind of just based on what he's done before. I think that's kind of the route he'd go in.
Avi, who's the best coach in the division?
I would be hopeful that it's McAdoo, but given that he hasn't put a product on the field yet, I'm also going to have to say Gruden.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Chester. I think if we do rankings, which hopefully we'll before the season. Well, none of these guys would probably be in the top 15 for sure, and it would be tough to put someone in the top 20, but possible.
I think we should wait a little bit to do our rankings. Last year, we did our rankings after week 6, and so the Falcons...
Oh, I wanted to do them before the season.
I think a coach that can win with Kirk Cousins has got to be better than more than the top 15.
Definitely. The job Jay Gruden did last year was sensational, I agree.
They went 9-7 in the worst division in football. Let's not go crazy here.
I mean, someone's got to win the games, so anyone could have won the division.
Yeah, and they won 9 of them against the worst division of football. That's not that impressive.
All right, well, he beat Coughlin, he beat Garrett, and he beat Chip Kelly. Three geniuses of the profession. you ready for the roster game, Chester?
Let's go. On my whippy roster, in our roster again. 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 On my whippy roster, in our roster again.
All right, we'll do an abbreviated version of the roster game. I'm going to ask you one player on the team you root for, and you just tell me everything you know about him. He might be a very famous player. He won't be. He'll actually be a very anonymous player.
He'll probably be a guy who's in training camp and doesn't have a number on the back of his jersey.
No, I'll give you someone who has a number, because I feel like those guys never. And there's a prize for everyone who knows their anonymous player the best. AB, who's Brad Barrs?
Brad Barrs. I've definitely heard the name. I feel like he does have a chance of making the team. I think he's a defensive player.
That sounds like the language you use while you quickly Google him.
No.
No, listen, we have a very strict no Googling policy.
He's a defensive
player. I didn't think about last year. I feel like no one Googled last year, and now everyone's cheating this year.
I'm going to say he's a defensive player on the bubble, but I can't really get much closer than that.
Okay, all right, fine. Okay, Shamir. Who is John DePalma?
I thought I knew everyone on the roster. Wow.
All right, he's the long snapper. So we have a no long snapper. So I'm going to give you somebody
Why?
Else.
Why? The guy from America's Got Talent's a long snapper. That's the
I don't even know who you're talking about.
Really? Okay.
Is there a guy on America's Got Talent on the Eagles?
From the Jets.
No, the Eagles long...
Not the Jets? Is it the Eagles?
Eagles? The Eagles long snapper is like in the finals of America's Got Talent.
Oh, really? He's not one of the orthodox guys who does the beatboxing?
No. No, no. Watch America's Got Talent.
All right. Who's Denzel Rice, Shamir?
Denzel Rice is a...
Great name.
He's a corner. I believe he was on the practice squad last year. He may have been on the 53 at some point. He has dreadlocks. He's... flashed a lot in training camp. I haven't seen him do anything in the first couple of preseason games. I would say he's one of these guys who may make the roster as a special teams player or as a fifth or sixth corner. But you know, I think he's a bigger body if I remember correctly. Big dreadlocks, probably go probably like over 6 feet. Big guy.
Okay.
I think he went to a small college. I don't remember somewhere. I don't know exactly. Somewhere in the SEC maybe.
Chester, you have to answer for the Redskins.
Oh, come on.
Who is Willie Jefferson?
I don't think I could name probably like five starters on the Redskins.
But there's a guy, you know, I like to think like I've heard of every veteran in the NFL. There's a guy, David Bruton Jr., their safety. It says he's in his eighth year in the NFL and he's from Notre Dame, and I watch a lot of Notre Dame games. I don't know who that guy is on the Redskins. Jordan, you ready for your question? I got to get you a good one here.
Okay.
All right. Who's Joe Looney?
Joe Looney.
Very dear to your heart as a Canadian.
Is he Canadian? Okay. Offensive
line?
No,
I just mean, that the Looney, sorry.
Oh, Looney, I see. Okay, I was going to say, I didn't know. I knew that Arjun Calhoun's a guy who's a Canadian. I thought that was maybe a direction you were going to go in, but Joe Looney, yeah.
No, that would imply I like spend time preparing. I would have done that.
Okay. That's all I know. I'm pretty sure offensive line and name sounds vaguely familiar. And that's
so hopefully
all
you don't see him this year, I guess. He is an offensive
line. I don't think we will see him, especially considering we've got Ronald Leary as well, and he's not even starting.
And not to mention the highway robbery of Lyle Collins, which is like a whole other podcast.
Right.
How did nobody sign that guy? It's still upsetting.
It's ridiculous.
And the bigger question is how the Patriots not get him, honestly, because they get all those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
My guess is that Collins grew up as a Cowboys fan.
I think his agent just steered him there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I have no idea. I was actually, I was sequestered away from society when all that went down. So I'm the wrong guy to ask. When
he was in jail, if everyone's happened. Not listening.
Yes.
Sequestered away in society. That's a nice way of saying like.
Yes, exactly.
I did 4 to 6 years on a attempted homicide.
Okay, so now let's jump into the schedules. As you guys know, if you've been listening to our podcast this year, unlike last year, we're not asking you to predict your own team's schedule because everybody predicts their team to go 12-4 and it's boring. This year, we are having your rival pick your schedule. So how about Jordan? We'll have you do Washington because you guys were the preseason division favorites last year and you ended up in last, ended up in first. So let's see if you can reverse that this year. So, all right. So Jordan, yeah, week one, the Washington professional football team starts in the early Monday nighter at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers without Le'Veon Bell in that game.
I'm going to give me Pittsburgh.
Okay. So they start 0-1. And then week two, they're at home again against the Cowboys, your beloved Cowboys.
I'm going to say they win that game.
That game in Washington, that was the crazy Sunday nighter last year, right?
Yes, that's right. It was. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, I almost got divorced over that game. I was in New Orleans with my wife, and we were at some music club, and like the bathroom line was super long, so I told her I was going to leave to go somewhere else to go to the bathroom. And that really was my intent. But then when I got to the bathroom or like the other place where I was waiting for the bathroom, I saw like the last 2 minutes of that game, which obviously ended up taking like half an hour. And so she kept texting me, "Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?" And I looked at the clock and I said to her, "I'll be there in 30 seconds. And I said this for half an hour. And suffice to say the night did not end well for me or for you.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. And this year you expect the same. All right. So they get they're up to 1-1. And then in week three, they go to face the Giants in New York.
I'll say in New York, I'll take the Giants in that one.
All right. And then week four, they come home and they get to play the beloved Browns. Everyone's favorite team to play at home.
Yeah. Give me Washington.
All right. 2-2 at Baltimore.
Give me Baltimore.
Okay. And then they come home and face the Eagles.
I'll say they beat the Eagles in that game.
Okay, so 3-3. Then they go on the road to face the Lions.
On turf. Yeah, I'll say that they beat Detroit.
All right, that's a big win because the next week they're playing Cincinnati in London.
Ooh, Cincinnati in London. So they're going from the road. Okay, I'll say they lose in London.
Okay, so they're 4-4. They have the bye week, obviously, after London, and then they start their second half. Their second half is brutal, or the next four games, anyways. They start out, they're playing the Vikings in week 10.
Yeah, I'll give them a loss in that one.
And then they face the Packers on Sunday Night Football in Week 11.
Give them another loss.
And then they play. So they play Sunday night, and then they play Thursday, 3 days on 3 days rest, relatively early, the afternoon game against the Cowboys in Dallas on Thanksgiving.
Ooh, that's a rough game. Give me the Cowboys in that one.
And then the next week they go at Arizona.
Oh my gosh, that is brutal. Give me the Cardinals.
So they go from 4-4 to 4-8. That's a really tough run. And then it gets easier in December. A little bit, but it might be too late. They go at the Eagles in Week 14.
Yeah, I'll give me that one.
Okay, so they're going to sweep the Eagles, you think. Then they come home to face Carolina on Monday Night Football, so not that much easier.
Yeah, actually. I'll say they lose that game.
Okay, so they're 5-9. They're obviously, their season's over. They go at Chicago on Christmas Eve.
They beat Chicago.
All right, 6-9, and now they're just hurting their draft position. And then at Week 17, they face the Giants at home.
I'll say they lose that one.
All right, who should do the Cowboys? How about who hates the Cowboys more, Shamir or Abe?
I hate the Eagles more, probably. So
okay, all right, okay, Shamir.
I don't think it's possible for anybody to hate the Cowboys more than I do.
Okay, so we'll let you pick the Cowboys schedule. Week one, the Cowboys are at home against the Giants.
Cowboy win.
Okay, week two they go at Washington.
Washington win.
Okay, week three they're home against Chicago.
Cowboy win.
Okay, week four they're at San Francisco.
Cowboy win.
All right, 3-1. Nothing's going to be tougher. They face the Bengals in week five at home.
It's not life or death.
I'm going to give that to the Cowboys.
Oh, big win.
Big win. This is before Romo gets hurt, yeah.
Yeah, so 4-1, and then they go at Green Bay the next week.
Loss.
Okay, so 4-2, then they have the bye. Coming out of the bye, they face your Eagles on Sunday Night Football at home.
At home, yeah, Cowboy win.
All right, 5-2, then they go at Cleveland.
Win.
6-2, wow, after four wins last year. And then at Pittsburgh in week 10.
Loss.
All right, and then at home against Baltimore?
They got to lose an easy one somewhere. I'm going to say it's a loss.
Okay, they're still 6-4, and then they are at home against Washington the next week.
At home against Washington, that's a win.
Yeah, that's the one on Thanksgiving. So they're 7-4, and then they play the next Thursday as well against the Vikings in Minnesota.
Loss.
Okay, and then at New York on Sunday Night Football the next week.
Loss.
Okay, so they go from 7-4 to 7-6.
Yeah, they're gonna most of these NFC East teams split the home roads.
All right, now the end of the schedule is relatively easy. They face Tampa Bay at home in Week 15.
It's probably a win. I mean, Tampa Bay could be good though.
Yeah. Okay, so they're 8-6, and then so the next week, so Christmas is on Sunday this year. Most of the games are on Saturday. There's two games on Sunday, and then they're playing Monday night against the Lions at home.
That's a tough one. I don't know what the Lions are going to be this year. I'll give that a Cowboy win also.
Okay, so that puts them at 9-6 in pretty good position probably given this division. In week 17, they're at the Eagles.
That's a loss. I think all these teams split. I don't think there's any sweeps in the NFC East. There hasn't been a sweep in a while.
All right, so Dallas starts 6-2. They cool down. They finish 9-7. Jordan, how would you feel about a prediction of 9-7 for your Cowboys?
Yeah, I went through the Cowboys schedule and I kind of looked at all the games, and that's about what I had: 9-7, 10-6. So you know, in this division, I think that could be good enough to make the playoffs. So you know, if Romo stays healthy, I think that's probably where they'll finish. If he's not, then it'll be significantly worse than that.
All right, Abe, you said that you hate the Giants the most. Is that right? Or the Eagles the most? Excuse me.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so week one, your hated Philadelphia Eagles are at home against Cleveland.
I think I'll give that one to them.
Okay, week two, Monday Night Football at Chicago. Ooh, that's a terrible game on Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football hasn't been good in recent times.
Yeah, but Philly at Chicago, what's the hope? I mean, I guess it's early enough that it's not like either one is going to be like 5-10 yet, but...
Yeah, I think Bradford's still in the game at this point, still on the field at this point. I think Akiva mentioned earlier that Romo is the most injury-prone quarterback in the league, but we certainly have a challenger in Bradford, but I'll give him the win.
Also, 2-0 start for the Eagles in the Doug Peterson era, and then they come home in week three to face the Steelers. Can they go 3-0 heading into their early bye?
No, they cannot.
Oh, so they lose a battle of Pennsylvania. 2-1, still not bad. Then they, coming off the bye, they're at Detroit.
I'll give them a loss. I think Stafford looked good at the second half of last year.
Okay, then they're at Washington the next week.
Yeah, I think that's a loss on the road.
Okay, and then they face the Vikings at home the next week.
Vikings are tough. At this point, probably the Eagles' offense is falling apart. Bradford, they have he's probably gone at this point. I don't think they could beat the Vikings.
They go from 2-0 to 2-4. And this losing streak could continue because the next week they're facing the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, again, on the road. I'll give them another loss. I don't think this season's going to go that well.
All right, and the next week they're at the Giants.
This one's going to be close. But yeah, I think the Giants pull it out in one of those Eli Manning classic fourth quarter comebacks.
All right, so they started 2-0. Now they're 2-6. They're at home against Atlanta the next week.
Yeah, they could probably handle the Falcons at home.
Okay, and they need to because the rest of the schedule gets really tough. They're 3-6. The next week they face at Seattle.
Yeah, that's a loss.
And then the next week, Monday Night Football against the Packers at home.
I'll be at that game.
Oh, nice. I feel like they could play with the Packers, but I don't think they could pull it out, so I'm going to give them a loss.
All right, so they're stuck at 3 wins. Then they're at Cincinnati the next week as we're into December.
Wow, this is a rough patch. I think they're losing this one too.
They are 3-9 now.
Yeah, and I'm delighted at this point.
Yeah, 3-9. Now they're just playing draft position, and now I think is where they could get a couple of wins because they're facing all their divisional opponents at home in the end of the season. So it starts in week 14 against Washington.
Yeah, so at home they could probably handle Washington. Maybe
4-9.
Maybe their rookie quarterback is starting to get a feel for things at this point in the season.
Okay, and then at week 15 they're at Baltimore.
Come on, we know Bradford's not going to still be their quarterback at this point this season. I think they're still struggling, and they take another loss.
All right, and then they face the Giants at home on Thursday night, 3 days later.
Yeah, they'll split with the Giants, so let's give them a win here.
Okay, so that gets them up to 5-10, and then they finish the season at home against the Cowboys.
Yeah, if Romo is playing, they don't have a chance against the Cowboys, and I'm assuming he will be. Just, you know, why not? So I'll give it to the Cowboys.
Okay, Shamir, how do you feel about that 5-11 prediction for your Eagles?
I mean, I have them somewhere at 7-9, so we're only off by 2 games. You know, I don't know. There's a couple of games in there that I think they can go either way, and it's just so hard to predict this offense. I really have no idea how this offense is going to play. So it wouldn't shock me if they went 5-11, or wouldn't shock me if they went 7-9. I don't think there's really much of a difference. They're missing the playoffs either way.
All right, okay. So I'll give you a chance for a little bit of revenge against AB. Actually, you and Jordan will split this one, but you'll do before the bye. So the Giants in Week 1, they're at the Cowboys.
I had the Cowboys winning that one.
Yeah, and will Eli somehow screw up the clock management at the end of that game, or will the Cowboys win it more easily?
No, I just think the Cowboys are ready to kind of explode. They're ready. They had such a frustrating last season. I think they're going to put up a 40-burger on the first game.
Oh, wow. All right, Week 2, they're at home against the Saints.
Are the Saints even good anymore? The Giants. The Giants gave up like 750 touchdowns to the Saints last year.
Yeah, they usually do.
It was like 49-41 or something.
That was a crazy game. I think the Giants win that game.
All right, so they're 1-1. Then they face Washington at home the next week.
Washington at home. They should protect home field against Washington.
All right, 2-1. Now they go on the road to face the two strongest teams in the NFC North on national TV games in consecutive weeks. Interesting. So in Week 4, they're at the Vikings on Monday Night Football.
That's a win for the Giants.
Oh, wow, really?
Yep.
Have you seen Eli's career numbers against the Vikings? He has 4 touchdowns and 14 interceptions.
I knew this was coming.
Eli always has massive first halves, and he plays well with the lights on in the first half of the season.
Yeah, no, that's true. He is much worse in the second half. All right, so that's a big win on the road. They get to 3-1, and then the next week they're on Sunday Night Football against the Packers.
They can't beat the Packers on the road, no way.
All right, okay, so they're still 3-2, and then they come home to face Baltimore.
That's a win also. Still, they go into these first halves 6-2, 7-1 every couple of years.
Yeah, they're usually better on the road than at home, though, in the Eli era. All right, so they're 4-2, and then they go to London the next week to face the Rams.
Oh, that's a win also.
All right, so 5-2, and then coming off the bye, they face the Eagles at home.
In the Meadowlands, yeah, it's a win also.
Oh, wow, you have the Giants at 6-2 this year. And then the next week, they're at home against the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday Night Football.
No, the Bengals are good. That's a loss.
All right, 6-3, and then the next week, they're at home against the Bears.
That's probably a Giants win also.
7-3. The next week, they're at Cleveland.
They have to lose an easy one somewhere, and Cleveland's going to win 5 games this year. Might as well be against the Giants.
All right, so you have them at 7-4. Yeah. Still, I think Giants fans will take that at this point. Then they're at Pittsburgh the next week.
Probably a loss also.
All right, 7-5. Then Sunday Night Football at home against the Cowboys.
It's a win for the Giants. Revenge from opening night.
At home the next week against Detroit. And 9-5, they might even be able to clinch this division.
That's a loss for the Giants.
Oh, wow. So they lose at home to the Lions. So that drops into 8-6. Still in decent position, although they got to go on the road their last two. Thursday Night Football. So on 3 days rest, they're at your Eagles.
That's a good one. I don't think the Giants can beat the Eagles twice in a season, regardless of... There's just too much on the line for the Eagles fans. I lose that game.
Okay, so 8-5 to 8-7, and all of a sudden it's a must win in Week 17 at Washington to finish the season.
this is like one of those years where you never know, the Giants could pull that magic again and sneak into the playoffs and do some damage. I give it to the Giants also.
Oh wow! So they sweep Washington. They finish 9-7. They tied with the Cowboys. I'm not sure who wins the tiebreaker yet. AB, would you take? How do you feel about a 9-7 prediction for the Giants this year?
That's kind of exactly where I'd put them. Maybe I would.
But he has them losing to Cleveland, losing to Detroit at home, winning at Minnesota on the road.
But that's so Giant.
Yeah.
Maybe they take the Lions game. So I'm between 9-10.
By the way, I was supposed to switch to Jordan after the bye. I forgot about that. Sorry, Jordan.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You were on a roll. It was fine.
All right, Jordan, I'll let you decide. Go back and study that quickly. The Giants and Cowboys both 9-7. Who's winning the tie? I think it'd be the Giants because we have them sweeping Washington, so they have the better divisional.
Yeah, I think that would be the Giants there. And I think there is you could give that Cleveland game to them. So I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants win, Cowboys are second, and maybe the Cowboys get the second wild card.
Are you guys in general agreement that, I mean, obviously anything could change, but it seems going into the season that the likelihood it'll be like last year where the winner of this division is going to be locked into that 4 seed in the playoffs?
Yeah, I agree with that.
A home game against the top wild card, which could be, the Vikings or Packers. It could be Seattle or Arizona.
That's not fun.
I think that's right, unless it's the Cowboys. And if it's the Cowboys, I could see them winning. If everything goes right for them, then they could be the 2 or 3 seed.
All right. Okay. So there we have it. 9-7 for the Giants and Cowboys, 7-9 for Washington, and 5-11 for the Eagles. We'll finish the podcast as we've been doing it this year.
Now, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
We'll start with you, AB. What's the thing you hate the most about the 2016 Giants?
Probably the middle of their defense. They've ignored linebacker kind of as if the position doesn't exist in the draft for like 10 years. And it hasn't worked out till now, so I don't see why that would change.
All right, so the middle of that defense. What about you, Jordan? What do you hate the most about the Cowboys?
The defense in general, the owner, number two receiver, tight end is getting old.
Which player on the Cowboys elicits the most curse words from you on an average Sunday?
Oh, man. That's hard. It used to be Flozell Adams back in the day because he would take so many penalties.
A lot of false starts.
Yes. Yeah. But nowadays, oh, man. Probably, I'll say probably someone like Brandon Carr or Mo Claiborne. Or is it
when they cut to Jerry in the box?
Yeah, or when they cut to Jerry getting his glasses cleaned in the box. Yeah, Jerry, I just hate Jerry Jones.
With one of his buddies in there.
Yeah, exactly.
With Chris Christie.
Yeah, Chris Christie was in there. Yeah, Jerry Jones is just, he's just terrible. And I wish they'd do something to get rid of him, but they never will. And I'm just going to have to wait until, he passes on, which is, will be a sad day, I'm sure, for his family. But, I just think the Cowboys are just going to be mediocre until then. So there's so many problems on this team. So many problems. But, I mean, the good parts of the team, if they're so good, they could almost lift up the rest of the team and, make them somewhat decent. But I don't see them going on a deep run or anything this year.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how beloved Chris Christie was in New Jersey after Hurricane Sandy. And he decided to use that political. He decided first he's going to become friends with Jerry Jones because there's nothing that New Jerseyites, whether they're Giants fans or Jets fans or Eagles fans, there's nothing they like more than Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. And then he threw in with Trump. So he still does love Bruce. So he has one thing going for him in New Jersey. But yeah, I understand why his approval ratings in that state are a little low at the moment. Shamir.
Yes.
What do you hate the most about this this Eagles team?
Nothing gives me greater aggravation than thinking back to the days when we had LeSean McCoy, Jeremy Maclin, DeSean Jackson, and the explosive playmakers. Now you look at the roster, just totally devoid of an explosive offensive player. Eagles wish we had a Dez Bryant or an Odell Beckham, or even we would bring DeSean Jackson back in a heartbeat. I mean, we don't have a single player on the offense, maybe with the exception of the occasional screen pass to Darren Sproles that really scares teams or can really get Eagles fans out of their seats. I mean, the Eagles, if they're lucky, are going to dink and dunk down the field and, run it in from 2 yards out. But there's not going to be a lot of 80-yard touchdowns from this team.
AB, let me ask you another question, actually, because to me this answer is so obvious, and yet I've seen some alternative takes the last couple of weeks, which kind of surprised me. So let me ask you, as a Giants fan, but try and be objective, not do you think he should be, but do you think he will be? Will Eli Manning be in the Hall of Fame?
I thought you were going for should. Will is a little bit of a twist. It's really hard to say how people are going to perceive him. I think If his career ended today, no. If he puts in four more years, even like he did the last four, I think he's going to squeeze in as probably one of the worst quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, I think he'd make it.
Wow, I'm shocked to hear that. To me, it's like so obvious, like beyond a shadow of a doubt that he will be in the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying whether he should be, but first of all, he's going to have the numbers because he's played a long time in this era and he stayed healthy. He's already 8th all-time in touchdowns and 11th all-time in yards. So he could end up top 5 all-time at both of those. He's got the 2 Super Bowls in New York. I mean, the most overrated player in NFL history, obviously, is Joe Namath. You win a Super Bowl in New York, you're almost guaranteed. You win 2. I think Eli's very overrated. I don't think he should be. But to me, it's like a no-brainer he will be. So I'm kind of surprised that as a Giants fan, you think that he might not. If his career ended today, he's 8th all-time in touchdowns. He's got 6 fewer than John Elway.
You made a strong case, but every time I read an article from any writer about this, it's about how his numbers just don't compare to anyone, like literally anyone that's in the, not literally, but almost anyone who's in the Hall of Fame right now.
But again, his yards and touchdowns are better than everybody's. He's got more than Joe Montana.
I think they're going to put him in there.
Dan Fouts?
I think they'll put him in there.
Yeah. Jordan, what about Tony Romo?
Oh, man. It's a non-starter. What a question, hey? So much potential. I mean, right now, no. But I love Tony Romo. I think he's such a good dude. So if he somehow can win a Super Bowl or something at the end of his career here, he could squeak in. But I can't really see it at this point of his career.
He's going to need a Super Bowl to have any chance.
Yeah, and for him, it's perception. He has the problem, the opposite of Eli, because he's actually, he's been great since he came into the league. He's the second most game-winning drives of all quarterbacks behind only Peyton Manning, and the second most fourth-quarter comebacks behind Peyton Manning. He is the most clutch quarterback that you can possibly be, and yet his perception is the complete opposite of that, obviously. And so he gets punished for something that's actually a strength. And then also, obviously, his injury, so he hasn't really played that long, and he hasn't, even though he's been good in the regular season, in the playoffs he hasn't succeeded. So I think he's a better quarterback than Eli Manning, but whereas I think Eli definitely will be in the Hall of Fame, sadly, I don't think Romo will, unless he somehow, stays around for another 2 or 3 years and does something like Kurt Warner. But anyways, guys, Shamir, will Carson Wentz be a Hall of Fame?
I don't know. I can't. Can anybody on this podcast name a trade where you traded 15 draft picks for one player that was successful?
Exactly.
RG,
Yeah, Ricky Williams, Herschel Walker, yeah. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. Jordan, once again, you're on Twitter, Jordan Parhar, AB or ABABIE Sutton. Shamir, you're Tony the Hippo.
Correct.
Thanks, guys, for joining us. We might hear from you again if one of your teams becomes more relevant this season than I think they are. But look, if the Giants are 8-3, AB, we're going to have to bring you on at that point.
Happy to do it.
All right, guys, thank you so much. Have a good night.
See ya.
Bye-bye.